Welcome back to Head Games. I'm Ben Rosenberg, joined by the one and only TJ Void.
What's going TJ, on, man?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well. You know, summer is starting to hit Texas full-fledged. Yeah. So we're definitely feeling the heat. We're a little softer now being stuck in the house for so long. So the heat hurts a little bit more than it's supposed to. But how are y'all? How are you doing, man?
We're doing well, man. Same thing. Summer's kind of in tune here, and it's nice outside. You know, we had a text exchange the other day that landed on Bone Thugs.
And right.
Us both being Bone Thugs fans, which I think is funny.
That's right.
So I wanted to ask you to start us off this week. Yeah. What's your favorite Bone Thugs song?
So off the top of my head, I wanted to say Crossroads, but I don't think that is. I think For the Love of Money is probably my favorite Bone Thugs song. Truthfully, Bone Thugs had songs on... Had like a compilation album with their, you know, ambiguous Bone Thugs and Harmony family that I really liked. Oh, let me take that back. There's two I'm going to go with.
Okay.
The Days of Our Lives on the Set It Off soundtrack that's been sampled by her on Damage, if you didn't know. And then number two, they had a song, Look Into My Eyes, that was off the Batman and Robin soundtrack.
Wow.
Yeah, that's those are probably my favorite too, man, honestly. Damn. Yeah, what about you?
Those are deep cuts. I'm actually going to go with two very different songs, more popular than the ones you mentioned, but one is the first song you mentioned, For the Love of Money, is one of my favorites. I hesitated to pick these two because they both have features, right? Eazy-E's on For the Love of Money.
It's right.
Great, great song. And then the second is Notorious Thugs with Big E. And I say that because we used to play that as a pump up song when I was on my way to play intramural basketball games in college. We'd play that. Right. I think purposefully, ironically, we'd play that and then Tupac Hit Him Up back to back. And my buddy's like old ass blazer that sounded like a airplane when it was going to take off and just had no bass whatsoever. And I think we blew out the speakers every time we played it. So
yeah, no,
those are mine too.
Hit Them Up puts you in a crazy mood every time you hear it. It's one of, it's funny now we can get off of there, but one of the things that, there was some just Twitter question that people asked, like, what's the hardest intro to a song you ever heard or what? And it's like, that has to be right. Like as soon as you turn that on within a second, you're like, okay. This escalated quickly. But fun fact about Bone Thugs and Harmony, man, I used to sit. Remember, these are CD days. I used to sit and try to learn every single word of Bone Thugs and Harmony songs. Jesus. You got to think. It took me 3 hours to learn Busy Bones' first verse to the Tupac and Bone Thugs song.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Only group to have a song with both guys.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
That's awesome, man. I can't even imagine trying to learn. Like, they set a whole different style, right? I mean, that was like, just to be able to spit like that at any time, but back then it was crazy.
Yep.
All right, well, we'll stop talking about Bone Thugs. This is a Sports Insight podcast after all. So first thing we wanted to just touch on, last time we talked a bit about this race norming thing, and I'm sure you saw that just this week, the NFL came out and basically said they're going to stop doing race norming when it comes to paying out players. And they're going to do it both retroactively and going into the future. I just wanted to get your thoughts about that.
So first of all, the NFL needs to send us a check. We probably put it on their brains to begin with. Secondly, first of all, that's good, right? That they're trying to be, the NFL is really slow to progress on things. Not as slow as baseball, but not nearly at the rate of speed of the NBA. But I guess what I didn't see, not to be negative about something that's, you know, a step forward, is what are they going to do? You know what I mean? I may have overlooked it, you know, but from what I've seen and what I've read, I mean, thank you for not race norming, but what are you going to do? Because the NFL is really, really, really good at performative politics.
Yep.
Really good. And so I'm wondering, the cynic in me is thinking that this is one of those things, you know, to be honest with you. But for the sake of the players in the league now, who honestly are starting to realize their leverage a little bit more, you know, more of the Dak Prescott mode. But more so for the players who, you know, played, you know, in the yesteryear and are now the reason for this, because they had ended up filing a lawsuit. Yeah. What'd you think about that, man?
So the one observation I did make to your question, like, well, this is great, but what are they going to do? They did say they're forming a panel of, quote, neuropsychologists to basically come up with a new way of testing and a different thing to do that's not race norming. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting that they made a point of saying that there were, let me make sure I get this right, there were 2 female and 3 Black doctors on this panel. So I think that kind of, that gets to 2 things, right? One thing, like, good on them, right? It's right. A good thing, like you said, that they're doing this. It's a good thing they're forming this panel, but it also gets to the performative aspect of kind of everything they do, which is like, really, you had to say, it's like the guy who says, oh, I have a Black friend, I'm not right. racist, right? It's like, absolutely. It's like you had to point out that there was a Black doctor and there were Black doctors and female doctors on this panel to like make it clear that you were like not screwing up more. Like that right. sort of hit the wrong way right. for me. But I think the bigger takeaway is like, I hope at least that more people now know what race norming is. And that maybe there can be a bigger conversation about it in other fields as well, right? Like many people, as we were talking about before we started recording, like many people don't even know what this term means. Right. And it originates in medicine, like we talked about last time. So maybe there's a hope that there will be some overflow from the NFL to sort of the real world of medicine, where these kinds of race-based decisions are affecting people's everyday and long-term life outcomes, as you mentioned last time.
Right, because I mean, like you talked about, because I you brought it to my attention exactly what race norming was. And so I think, like you said, on a larger scale, if this becomes a conversation of this being used in the medical field, and now it leads to other issues, right? Because if you really look at it, then you can dig deeper and really drill down to, okay, why are these set of people struggling with these this particular set of health conditions? And then if like you said, it can just be traced back to all types of different environmental things, societal things, but even just in the here and present, a lot of the people that they see that struggle with these health conditions that they, you know, basically just paint on to a race sector, these people aren't insured to the level that they need to be. And so it's almost like you're making them choose your health or to be, you know, financially stable. Yeah. But also, I think what it'll do, if they can get this right, man, that it can actually shift the mistrust that we often talk about with the health and the Black and brown community. Yeah. So that people will be healthier in general, or at least proactive. Yeah. in their health for generations to yeah. come. So this is a huge thing. It could be.
Yeah. Let's hope so. Let's hope right. that it leads to kind of the outcomes that you're talking about. I think that would be great.
Absolutely.
All right. So to happier topic. Well, I guess that was pretty happy.
Semi happy.
To another topic, we wanted to take a sort of look at what's happened so far in the NBA mm-hmm. playoffs. And the idea is that we're about halfway through round 2 now. And we just wanted to make some observations about what had happened to this point and just sort of see where we thought things might go from here. There's certainly been some surprises right. as well as things, you know, maybe going according to chalk. So, TJ, what are your initial thoughts on the first round and a half of the NBA playoffs?
So at the time of this recording, Brooklyn and Milwaukee are in game 4, right? Second round. But one thing we thought, I just assumed that the Warriors would make it via the play-in. And I don't know what happened in that game with Memphis, but it was just, here's my biggest takeaway, and I'll leave it to one point. The short turnaround is obvious. Like, dudes are dead. You know what I'm saying? Their legs are dead. It's the game the other night was like a 90s game between the game 3 yeah. against the Nets 86, and the Bucks.
86-83 yeah, or whatever.
I looked at the time. I said, wait a minute, this is the fourth quarter? I mean, yeah. just missing shots, and it's just those type of things, man. So I think that one of my biggest takeaways is that, number one, guys are tired. And then I'm sure that when they looked at the at the turnaround for next year, they were like, golly, because September, they start right back up, right? Yeah. But also, another big takeaway, man, is that the NBA is the torch is passing. Some of the guys that we grew up with, some of the greats that we've known, the young guys, man, this has been, they've taken over the playoffs, the Devin Bookers yep. of the world, even the Ja Morants and guys of that nature, man, the Donovan Mitchells, they've really taken the torch, you know, some a little bit reluctantly from the older guys and really ran with it. What have been your initial takeaways from the early round of the playoffs?
I think your first one, the guys are tired, clearly just bears reiterating, because I think it's just evident from watching them play, as you said, but also I think it comes through in the injuries that we're seeing. And like, I don't know that you'd see the same number and caliber of guys getting hurt if they hadn't had this quick turnaround, right? Like, had to have LeBron be hobbled, AD goes down. I mean, CP3 is still playing, but he had had a shoulder injury. Embiid missed a game. Like, these are big guys missing time. And I think obviously injuries are going to happen in any sport, right? But I think it's probably has to at least be partially attributable to the quick turnaround. I had similar observations to you. I mean, one big takeaway for me is this idea of the team really mattering. And like, we've seen now, you know, some of the biggest names, arguably some of the best players in the league, Steph, Dame, LeBron, Luka, probably Jokic is about to go out. These are like five of the top, 10 players in the league,
right?
And they're going to be out of the playoffs. And I think it just really points to this idea that of two things in the NBA now. One, you can't win alone, right? Like, you saw, I'm sure, Dame's game where he put up 55 or whatever it was and they lost, and he made 12 threes, right? Like, he was incredible, but he just didn't have enough around him, right? CJ didn't do enough. The rest of the team didn't do enough. Same for the Warriors' loss, right? Steph couldn't do it by himself. So I think it just becomes clear that you need at least two guys on your team in the NBA to win now. Same thing's happening with the Nuggets, right? Jokic, Murray's out. They're not going to get past the Suns. So I think that's one big observation, is you need two guys, right? But the related thing is that the team really matters. Like, it's even in a league like the NBA that's so star driven, you need other guys to step up. And we just didn't really see that for those teams that I just mentioned, where that they have one kind of big main guy.
Yeah. I mean, to be quite honest, the NBA has always been that way. Like, this idea that they want a guy to do it alone, that's a myth. That's never, ever happened. You can name, if I go back, so 25 years ago was 96, okay? And if we went back to 25 years ago and named the NBA champions, they each had two guys on their team every single time. Facts. And I want to say, just off the top of my head, that each team had at least two Hall of Famers, not just two guys. Like, these are two dudes that are go down, that have their bust as legendary players in this league. So this idea that you got to do it by yourself is ridiculous. It only happens in sports. It's stupid. but also, I think, just to piggyback off your point, man, not only are we seeing that the team matters, but I think that this, after this playoffs, that there's going to have to be reconstruction of rosters. Probably like we've never seen. Like, the Clippers, if they don't win, first of all, the Clippers look like they are ready to go to the house. Like, they are the most uninspired team. It almost looks like they don't like each other. It really does. And Ty Lue is just switching lineups and doing all this weird stuff that you don't typically do in the playoffs. You don't play 10 guys to the second round of the playoffs. No. But I think that's what also hurt some of those teams who didn't really know who they were. Like the Lakers changing their lineup just randomly and putting in guys that didn't fit the system, or, you know, Steve Nash drawing up the worst out of bounds play I've ever seen, to where Bruce Brown is getting a shot. No disrespect to Bruce Brown, but what are you doing, bro? You got KD. And so I think that if these teams, not necessarily the Nets, but if these teams don't do what they're supposed to do, like, Dallas may have to get rid of Porzingis at this point. The Clippers are going to have to blow. The Blazers need to do something different at this point. Yeah. I mean, they're stale. You know, the Nuggets are going to have to bring in somebody else. So these are teams that are just, I think the fallout, the Lakers, like, that roster just doesn't work. No. If AD's not playing at a high level, and LeBron is, I mean, Father Tom is doing what it does. I mean, it just looks different because it's LeBron and he's a species. So his wall still looks better than most dudes at that age, but it's there and you can see it, it's visible. And then where do they go from here? You know,
yep.
You got two starters on that team who scored, like the other day, two starters on the Lakers that scored 0 points in the game. The other night, Jokic had 35 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists. And he had more points and rebounds than the rest of the starters combined.
Jesus.
That's insane. Like that's crazy. That makes a guy look around his roster and say, what the heck are you? Why am I here?
Yeah.
Like, what am I? This is ridiculous. I'm wasting my youth on a roster that's just not going to win.
Yeah.
That was just a deeper observation. And then lastly, that there are levels to this. I mean, the Hawks and the 76ers won game one, and it was awesome, and it was cute, but now they're just getting killed.
Bye-bye.
And the 76ers are a really big team, and the Hawks are a really small team. And it's just, it looks that way. It looks like, all right, guys, enough is enough. Yeah. What do you think about the Clippers, though, man? Talk to me about the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, that's central to my last observation, which I think perfectly aligns with what you were saying about roster construction. And like, it's just the talent's important and other shit really matters also, right? Like, I think that the Clippers are the perfect example of that, because if you look at them on paper, and like, you can say what you want about their kind of their secondary guys, but if you just look at Kawhi and PG on paper, like, Paul George could be one of the most talented players in the league, right? We've talked about this before. On both ends, he's long, he can shoot, he can defend. He should be able to get what he wants when he wants. And then Kawhi, basically same thing. But they just, like you said, they look like they don't care. Like,
right.
It's hard to look at them and think like, all right, these guys are going to take them to where they need to be. So my observation was similar to yours, and it really does center around the Clippers. Like, rosters are going to be changing. And I think the sort of takeaway from that for me as a psychologist and observing this stuff is that you have to think about other things when you're constructing a team,
right?
You can't just slap guys together that are the most talented and expect it to work. Brooklyn being the exception. And the thing about those guys is they're all boys, right? Like, they all know each other. They're actual friends. So despite the fact that they haven't played together, as you've said many times on this pod, hoopers are going to hoop. Right. And so these guys know each other and they're all world class. And when they get on the court, they're going to figure it out. I don't think that goes for everybody, as clearly evidenced by LA, both LA teams, the Blazers. I mean, I have a soft spot for Dame and the Blazers. Dame's from the Bay. I love watching Dame play. And I always wanted to see them succeed with Terry Stotts and with him and CJ, but it's just untenable, right? I mean, you can't win with those guys in your backcourt together, I don't think. And that's shitty, but, you know, it's just going to be another roster overhaul.
Yeah, because at some point you stop looking at it like, well, this could work. And you have to start saying, this isn't working.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, all you have is the evidence that you have. And the funny thing about the Blazers is, you know, Jason Kidd is also a Bay Area guy. Mm-hmm. And, he, you know, Damian Lillard lobbied for him to come there. And that actually pushed Jason Kidd away.
Yeah.
The reason why he took his name out of the hat, because he don't want to be a part of, one, a rebuilding thing. Two, you know, to where now it's like, you know, you're almost coming in as this anointed savior because their guy, you are, you know, the guy to their guy, you know, and that makes it really hard. But I don't see Dame leaving as much as I see the roster changing.
Yeah, I agree.
But there were times, like, I'm looking at the Clippers and – I said this last year, and it's valid now. I really don't think Kawhi and Pete, I don't think he likes playing with Paul George. Like, just, if you just, I mean, you're a psychologist, you can see things like body language. You can see, it's almost like, you know, when you play at pickup games, then a team is really, they have really good guys on their team, but they're not playing for real. And then the little scrappy team is starting to win, and they start telling them, all right, guys, let's play for real. That's what the Clippers look like.
Yeah.
They look like they know they can turn it on, but sometimes they just don't. But I'm watching the game last night or the night before, and I'm watching DeMarcus Cousins. And he is on the bench with his arms folded. Now, anybody would tell you that body language says all negative things. You know what I'm saying? And I'm looking at that. I'm looking at Rondo not playing a second. You know, I'm looking at Morris being on the bench in crunch time. And I'm wondering, do these guys really know who they are as players? Which leads the question is, how can you know who you are as a team if you don't know who you are as an individual player? I think a lot of these guys oversell themselves to what they bring to the table. And that lends itself to poor teamwork, honestly. Yep. Yep. You know, as opposed to the Jazz, when they have guys, I know who I, outside of George Niang, who was doing some weird stuff last night. But, like, you got a Bogdan Bogdanovic who says, all right, I know I can score 30, but I'm going to just lock up this. Put me on him. I'll guard him. You know, or Royce O'Neal, who's actually from my hometown, who, you know, went to a school like University of Denver and then went to Baylor, then went undrafted, then had to claw his way in the league after playing in three countries. And he's saying, dog, I work too hard to be here. I don't need no shots. I don't need no nothing. Like Rudy Gobert even. Rudy Gobert, whether you think he should be three-time defensive player of the year or not, which I do not, but whatever, he doesn't need the ball to run hard. He still runs hard. And just tactically, him running the lane gets open shots for guys like Jordan Clarkson, Quinn Snyder, who's another piece of this puzzle that you're talking about. Not to be long-winded, but Quinn Snyder told Jordan Clarkson, okay, you're not a point guard. You're not necessarily a two guard. You come in and you just shoot.
Just get buckets.
You just be Jamal Crawford now. Whatever. Yeah. If you have to shoot 23s to make 10, fine, bro. You know what I'm saying? If you're off, we'll sit you down. You know how freeing that is to get the ability to do what you do well? You know what I'm saying? And you don't get yelled at for not doing something well that you never done well to begin with. Yeah. You know? And so now that he found his slot and Quinn Snyder put those guys in positions to be successful, you see what you see.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think what you're really underscoring, both with the example of the Clips and their weird ever-evolving rotations and of the Jazz, and I would throw the Suns in there too, who have really clear roles and rotations for what they do, is the emphasis that those teams have either not placed or placed on goals and sort of like the roles that each guy is supposed to play and how imperative that is in helping a team to reach its goals, right? Like the literature is really clear on this one. Like, teams tend to do better when guys know their role and what they're supposed to do, as you said, when you get on the court, whether that's I'm going to lock up and not get a single shot, or whether it's I'm going to be Jordan Clarkson and just I've got the greenest of green lights and I'm going to fire and fire and fire. It doesn't matter what the role is, as long as guys know it and they buy into it. And I think that just really clearly illustrates the difference between those teams, right? Or those kinds of teams. And you see with the Clippers, like, I don't even know if Kawhi and PG know what their role is on that team.
No, right.
And they're the supposed leaders and stars. Like, you watch too many of their possessions where those guys don't even touch the ball, right? It's like it swings around and Reggie Jackson's launching an early shot clock three. And I know that the whole team shot really well from three all year, but like, things change in the playoffs, right? And you expect, especially at certain times of the game, that you're going to get a Kawhi's going to get a bucket or the PG's going to get a bucket. And you just don't see that happen. And I think part of it is they again, the roles are just unclear of who's supposed to be doing what.
And that shows because they don't have any sets. Like, there's no, at no point do they say, like you said, all right, Kawhi is scoring or Kawhi needs a shot or Paul George needs a shot. Do they set a place for him or get a set where he gets the ball where he likes it? It's usually a one-on-one situation. And then you get the Morrises and the guys that's like, well, I haven't shot in a while, so I'm going to just shoot. whatever that means. But I think I was asked this question, honestly, in an interview recently, and they said, well, what do you think makes a team effective? And my answer was exactly kind of what you said, was that everybody knows their role. They know their strengths and their weaknesses. They don't lay into the strengths and weaknesses, but they understand them. And I understand my teammates' strengths and weaknesses. And I think the clear display of that is the Suns. Because there are two things. There's also like a expectation and an appreciation. Like the Clippers expect. We expect to win. I'm not worried about being down 2-0. The Suns are like, listen, we got guys who this their first time here, or you got a guy like CP that people are questioning whether he's top, which is I love Shannon Sharp. That's a ridiculous statement to say that CP3 isn't a top 5 point guard because of all he's done and what he's doing now. Like, he's I don't want to, I'm not going to give Devin Booker's brilliance. I'm not going to do that and say that CP, that's because of CP3's leadership, right? Devin Booker is Devin Booker. But that team, the DeAndre Ayton's of the world, yep. Tyson Chandler, I love Tyson Chandler, but Tyson Chandler owes about 10 years of his career to CP3. Even when him
and CP3, lobs, baby.
Right, even when they weren't playing together, he yep. got him two contracts. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was a good player. With CP3, he became a really good player, on the brink of being a great player. Cameron Payne was out of the league. I thought Cameron Payne, I've gotten away from saying NBA players weren't good, but I thought that he wasn't good in relation to an NBA player.
Yeah.
I was wrong. Like, in the Lakers series, he was actually calling the ISOs against LeBron. Like, y'all clear out. This guy's old.
Yep.
I'm just going to go by him and do a layup. And he's been a key contributor. Even there, Markel Brooks. I mean, not Brooks. His name escapes me right now, from Villanova.
Yep.
But
I can't remember either.
You kick it to him, he's scoring.
Yeah.
It's just CP just brings confidence to guys because of his confidence. Yeah. And I think that he's learned how to tone it down. You know what I'm saying? When he was at Lob City, he was almost too much. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't need you to come show me game film like 2 minutes after the game. Relax. You know what I'm saying? We all lost. We were all up 3-1 and we all gave up a 3-game lead. I think he's learned, honestly, to tone it back, to reel it in some, but then still have those expectations enough to let, I'm going to let you be you, but I'm going to put you in position to be the best you can be. Right. Yeah. Not too many times you get to play with a point guard that's going to get 15 assists and zero turnovers in a playoff game.
Yeah.
That's insane, man.
He's a point guard.
It helps to have Monty Williams, who was pretty much shunned. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Then he had some real life events happen that put the career into perspective, to also lead that team and say, guys, I understand that this is important. There's bigger things in life than basketball. But while we're here, let's go ahead, you know, and then he's a branch off the San Antonio Spurs tree. Like, systems matter, man. Teammates matter. The complete construction matters. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And having CP3 be able to come in and really fulfill that role of, like, we were talking about a point guard, but also have the respect of the guys to say, look, Devin, you're a superstar. I need you to do a little more of this and a little less of this, right? Look at Bridges. That's the dude's name.
Bridges, you need to, there you go.
If you're open in the corner, shoot that shit, right? Like, right. Just to be really clear with guys and have the respect on his teammates' behalf for them to say, you know what? If CP3 is telling me this, he probably knows what the fuck he's talking about.
Right.
I should probably listen to him.
Absolutely.
All right. So does anything that's happened so far in the first round and a half change your thoughts on who's going to win the title? And let's keep it brief.
Well, it has to, right? Because the Lakers got eliminated. So I really don't know who's coming. I think a champion is in the East, though. Yeah. And I think that the Nets are going to have a harder time with the 76ers than I initially thought. Specifically if Harden isn't healthy. But all things considered, all teams, all rosters intact, I'm still going to go Nets, and I'm still going to reluctantly go with the Clippers, but I really think the Suns are going to go to the West, going to win, pull out of the West. That's my heart. So I'm going to go with the Suns. Suns, Nets win the championship.
Okay. Damn. Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, I think the champ comes out of the East, whether it's Philly or the Brooklyn Nets. I'm going to go with the Jazz, man. I'm going to revise what I said.
Okay.
I who knows if they're even going to get past the Clips, but they're fun to watch play. And
they
I hope that Mike Conley comes back. I've always liked Mike Conley. I think he's a really solid contributor. And I think they have a good, deep roster, a lot of talent across the board. They seem, as you said, to really like playing together. They have a good system in place. So I'm gonna say the Jazz, man. A little shout to Salt Lake. We'll see. Although this is funny, apparently Stephen A. said that Spida Donovan Mitchell is the best player in Utah Jazz history recently.
Stephen A. has said a lot of crazy things
like
lately.
Bro.
Like, come on.
What? That's not even remotely close.
Yeah. I mean, even I'm getting tired of the Karl Malone references every time Utah plays.
Yeah.
But he has every single record outside of the record that John Stockton has, which John Stockton has those records for the whole NBA. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, Come on, relax. I like Donovan Mitchell as much as the next man. It's really, 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 really hard for me to cheer for Utah. So I don't.
Yeah.
But yeah. I do like the guys individually. I like how their team is constructed. And I think that they play basketball how basketball is meant to be played. I do. So I wouldn't be surprised if they win. But if Donovan Mitchell isn't 100%, man, that ankle.
Yeah, he did look like he tweaked it the other night. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens there.
We'll see.
All right, TJ, always fun to chat, man. Absolutely, thanks, everyone, man, for listening. Please rate and subscribe where applicable. We are on Twitter at HeadGamePsych. That guy's on Twitter at TJ Void. And I'm on Twitter, BD Rosenberg, PhD. Thanks for listening.